Welcome to the Marshall Pro Podcast. This episode we have my man Rick Mears. I think this is Rick's second or third visit to the Marshall Pro Podcast. I love the guy. Just an unabashed... He's a hero. Look, I just admit it. There's no need to sugarcoat it. Guy's a hero. Fellow Californian, so that makes him great. But just how can you not love Rick Mears? Everything that he's achieved, the living embodiment of cool. Just California cool. Master. Absolute master of the Indy 500. AJ Foyt, Al Unser, Mario Andretti. There are many who excelled at Indianapolis. And every year we talk about, was Rick the best ever? Possibly. The guy is just a beast. But the thing I love about Rick is he's also honest. Honest as hell. And when you speak with him, you take the conversation in some interesting directions, too. Rang him and we spoke about 1992. Not only 25 years ago on the clock, but interesting quarter-century milestone from his last Indy 500. Kind of crazy to think it's been that long, 25 years, since Rick raced at the 500. I think that's because we see him every day. He's always here as part of the Team Penske family, but it is a little bit nuts to think that 25 years ago, the Rocket stopped competing at Indianapolis. Nonetheless, that's what we spoke about. That was the original concept for us to delve into, and that's what we took things in a different and deeper area on retirement. The timing, the reasoning, the thoughts, the inklings, when he was first getting that little whisper in the back of his head about, is it time? So a little different than what I thought, and I'm so glad that that's something that Rick really wanted to delve into. And we think about this 25 years ago since Rick's last 500, but why? What made it his last 500? And what, it wasn't planned, as he will reveal, or, you know, for, if you know Rick and you've heard the stories, and it's nothing new, but some of his conversations about why, what led to this becoming his final 500. I really found that part fascinating, and I hope you do too. Every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast is fresh on iTunes the moment that it goes live. I also drop these onto the Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page. Everything's archived there. We are rushing up to about 150 episodes, just as a little bit of a, it's not 25 years, but it's 1 year. We are celebrating our 1 year anniversary this week. This week, last year, the Indianapolis 500 debuted our little podcast, and it's going well, all thanks to you. So, okay, I'm going to stop yammering here, and let's go with the Rocket.
Yeah, it would have been nicer to end on a better note, but one thing about it, I guess one reason I don't have a lot of feelings one way or the other about it is because at the time I didn't realize it was the last one.
Mm.
You know, I still hadn't made a decision. I'd been kicking it around a little bit. You know, for the past couple of years, off and on, it crossed my mind, and man, how much longer am I going to do this? You know, and I'd realized the desire was tapering off, so I was kind of keeping tabs on that. That was the first, you know, indicator. I remember my first indicator that desire was going away is, I don't remember what year it was, but I remember walking back in the garage one morning and walking in the door and saying, okay, guys, where are we at? What are we doing today? You know?
Hmm.
And I stopped and went, wait a minute. I didn't take it home with me last night.
Yeah.
Because I was always the kind of guy that, you know, I enjoyed working with a car and trying to build a better mousetrap, you know, because I'm lazy and I want it to work better so I don't have to work as hard. And so I'd always come back in the mornings and, you know, come back in and say, okay, well, that's what I was thinking about. We need to take a look at trying this, and this, you know?
Yeah.
And I walked in the garage and said, okay, what are we doing? What's on the agenda? And it just dawned on me for some reason. Whoa, wait a minute. Oh, desire. It's starting to slip, you know? And that was really the first indicator that crossed my mind, and it made me start, oh, okay, I'm going to have to, maybe I'm getting closer than I even realized, you know. And so at that point, I just started keeping kind of tabs on the desire. And, you know, and I'd been kicking it around back and forth, but at the end of the 92 race, you know, I thought about it more by then. You know, but I wasn't ready to yet. I wasn't ready to make the call. It was a tough call, because it's a tough call to make.
Of course.
And so, you know, and then after Indy, and we went on into the season, and I had the wrist problem lingering from the crash, and we thought it was sprained, but it was actually some torn ligaments and some fractures. And that Michigan race, which was my last race, I didn't know it was the last race. I couldn't, the car went dead loose and we couldn't fix it. It just kept getting loose. I mean, tightened up on the stop and go back out and get looser, faster, you know, and just kept jumping sideways. And I'd have to turn loose with my right hand to catch it because I couldn't roll my hand under the wheel because of the splint on my wrist.
Yeah.
And so it was jumping sideways and I was having to turn loose with one hand and catch it with one hand and then come back and grab the wheel again. And it kept doing that, and finally I said, I'm going to take me and somebody with me. You know, this is not good. And I ended up parking the car. And so I got out of the car, and I talked to the doctor and said, hey, we got to do something. This wrist is not getting better. So we went, took another look at it, some more x-rays, and found out, you know, there was more damage, and I was going to have surgery. So now I'm going to miss the next couple of races. So that's when I got to thinking about it again. And then finally one day I woke up and thought, you idiot, you know, there's just another indicator of the desire. You'd have never parked a car that was still running before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's only one other time in my life that I could recall that I parked a car while it was still running. Was when I got the rock in my eye at the Meadowlands, and I couldn't see out of my left eye.
Jeez.
And I ran about 4 or 5 laps. I couldn't see left. You know, I was afraid somebody was going to dive in between me and the concrete wall in those hallways, you know. And I was going to end up taking us out. And so, you know, I ended up parking the car because of that. And so, you know, it's all, I grew up in the desert, you know, you get home no matter what it takes.
Yeah, there's a fighting spirit that comes from off-road racing that, that's just, it's not even part of the culture, it's just fact.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, and so I was laid up with my surgery and going to miss the next couple of races, and that crossed my mind, you know, and another thought, another thing, and well, I don't mean to get off on this long tail, but
no.
Another thing that led to the retirement. You know, I just started weighing things out, and you know, pluses and minuses, and the desire, and how much do I really want to do it? And, you know, so getting out of the car—that was an indicator. You know, and then another thought crossed my mind that I thought about when I crashed at Indy. When I got upside down, and when the water line broke, and I'd never thought of it. It went through my mind during the crash, and then it went out of my mind, and I never even thought about it again until that time. This time that I'm talking about, and this was when I was kicking things around here, and I remember when I crashed, when I got upside down, I was sliding along upside down. Feet and legs are killing me, and I've got fluids running in, and I'm starting to breathe shallow, so I'll have a breath in case it ignites, because I can't unbuckle my belts until it comes to a stop. So if it ignites, I'm going to have to hold my breath until I come to a stop to climb out. And so I'm sliding along here, and I'm breathing shallow, and stuff's coming in. I'm watching the sparks fly, and the infield go by, and the wall go by, and the infield go by, and the wall go by. And I remember this thought just flashed through my mind. I don't need this shit. I swear to God, that's all. You know, and by the time I come to a stop, it just flashed in my mind. I don't need this shit.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was on to hold my breath and watch for sparks and hoping it doesn't ignite. Is it fuel? Is it water? Is it what? And then I come to a stop and finally it hadn't lit. So okay, it's got to be water. I can relax and wait till they get to me.
Wow.
And then got out of the car. Well, then I went on, you know, through the rest of the month, everything else was seated. Okay, well, now when I laid up the surgery and I was weighing things like that, I remember, okay, I got out of the car. I'd have never done that before. And it just dawned on me, that thought that went through my head while I was sliding came back to me. Hmm. And I remember thinking that, you know. I remember that thought going through my mind. I would have never felt that before. You know?
Yeah.
And but there is another indicator. You know, the desire is not there. The deep enough desire to really do it the way it needs to be done, you know? And so those things, I was laid up, and then I woke up one morning and I thought, you idiot. If you're thinking about it, it's past time.
Wow.
You know, it's past time. If you're thinking about it this hard. And that's when I decided, you know, it's time to go. So even when I got out of the car in Michigan, I didn't realize that was going to be my last. So that's like, I didn't realize Indy was going to be my last one. So I don't really have a lot of thoughts. You know, coming full circle back after that long story. Sorry.
No, but I mean, it just speaks to the fact that this is something that those who rooted for you, followed you, and, you know, who were passionate observers of your career, maybe this 25-year milestone means more to them than to you, at least at the time. You know, again, not knowing it was going to be your last 500, but you know, had you known, had you done an Arrivederci Ricardo tour or something like that, like Mario did a few years later, then maybe you would have gone into the race with a more nostalgic feeling. But, you know, at the time, you were a racer just thinking of the race, not, you know, getting taken out by, not knowing that getting taken out in Jim Crawford's crash was actually going to be your last competitive laps around there.
Yeah, and then when that was another thing that helped on the decision, because there were so many other things, you know, not just, you know, the desire thing was the key, but there was so many other things that made it a difficult decision. And it's feeling like you're letting the team down.
Mm.
You know, that was the toughest part, because I know, you know, we had all four wins with the team, and I know how much the team wanted that fifth win as well, you know, and so I felt like I was letting them down by not continuing on to try to get that fifth win, and that was a very, very difficult part of the decision. But then again, one morning I woke up and thought, you idiot.
Wow.
You know, if the desire is not there, you're not going to do the job the way it needs to be done. You won't get the fifth win anyway.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to the team.
No, that's a great point. You know, the other thing that comes to mind, and I realize this isn't you, obviously, but, you know, you were by no means past your prime in that 92 race. Maybe, you know, you later recognized the desire was waning a bit, but that hard edge, the ability to go out and win, was still there. We had 92
as
well.
It hadn't affected the performance yet. That's why I was keeping tabs on it.
Yeah.
Because I knew it would affect the performance eventually, and that's why I started monitoring it the way I did. That's because I didn't want it. Once the performance started, I wanted to be out before it started affecting the performance. That was just my nature.
And one of the on that theme, and we certainly aren't speaking ill of the great Super Techs by any means, but how often is it do we get a single race where two Indy 500 winners, two of the very elusive four-time Indy 500 winners, turn their final laps? I mean, I know AJ came back and you know, toiled with it and tried a little bit in 93, but, you know, we if we still look back at where yourself and AJ contested their final 500s, it was both 1992. I know you've always had immense respect for him, but any thoughts on, good Lord, that's eight Indy 500 wins, both bidding farewell in the same race. That's we're never going to see that again.
I guess, you know, I didn't think about it that much at the time, but it, you know, it's probably a bigger deal than I thought. You know, both of us leaving there at the same time, and you know, as far as he goes, it just, you know, if I had any thought about it, it's amazing that he was going out the same time I was, because he started so much sooner.
Yeah.
You know, to keep that fire lit that long, you know. And that's what I've always said about those guys, you know, like him and like Mario. And, you know, I never wanted to, always wanted to get out before it started going the other direction. Because with the desire, that's why I always watch the desire. Desire tapers off. You're learning, because it's about going up all the time. It's about improving. How do I improve? Every corner, every lap. That's what you're trying to do. That's what you're trying to accomplish. Make it the next one better than you did the one before. That's the whole point that you're trying to accomplish. And if desire starts tapering off, then you start not improving. You plateau. And there's no such thing as plateau or level, because if you're going level, other guys are still going up. That means you're going down.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I always wanted to make sure that if I ever start getting to that point, I wanted to get out before it went the other way. And that, you know, but the media world, people and you know, fans or whatever, tend to start talking about when you're going to get, when you're going to quit. You know, it's almost like you ought to retire. You know, why do you keep doing this? You know, I've seen it with guys that have gone longer than they should. You know,
I think Tony Kanaan.
Well,
I was
going to
say, I think Tony Kanaan's going to knock out the next person that asks him that question. So
yeah,
it still goes on.
But to me, and to me, it's not up to everybody else whether they should or shouldn't.
Yeah,
you know, it's up to and because different people are different things. It's like I heard, I heard Mario say something one time. I didn't agree with it, but I understood it. Because when he was at that point, and they were asking him, you know, and when are you going to retire? When are you going to retire? And been going on for a while, you know. And I heard him say, well, he says, you know, he says, I know I may not be quite as fast as I once was, but I still feel I'm competitive and fast enough to win races, you know. And that was his thought.
Yeah.
That was his. He still had the desire to go out and do it. That's keeping the fire lit. And you know, if you've got the desire and the love of doing it and you still want to do it, fine, do it. You know? But what I didn't agree with was part of what made my desire was improving. And if I knew I wasn't as good as I was once or could be, then why do I want to be there?
Yeah.
And so I didn't agree with his thought process on it, but I understood it. But that was just not my, you know, because I knew I was still competitive enough to win races. You know, like you were talking about a while ago, I could still run, you know. At that point, I was still improving, trying to improve, you know. I hadn't gone the other direction yet, but we were still competitive enough to win races. But I could tell, I was not going to be climbing the way, you know, that I wanted to. And digging deep enough, which is what you have to do. And so, even though we were still competitive enough to win races, I didn't agree with it. And that's not the reason to do it. And then I've heard other things, like Petty one time when they were talking to him, Richard, and, you know, asking him, going through the same things, the questions and everything. And he said, you know, he obviously still loved what he was doing. And he still had the desire to go do it. But then there's also, it sounded like in his comment, there was still a money factor involved. He says, you know, because at that particular time, he was really kind of off the mark. He was there, but he wasn't. You know, he was running the mid-pack and hadn't been up front much for a while.
I always refer to that as the tribute act, where you're still there, you're still performing, but, you know, you're kind of part of the greatest hits package compared to someone who's on the top 40 charts with something new and fresh.
Yeah. But in his answer, one of his answers that I heard was, he says, you know, he said, back when I was running well and winning races, he said, we were making X amount of money. He said, we make more money today running where we're at than I did when I was winning. You know?
Yeah.
And so, which is understandable. You know, and it's like the guys in the era before me, I remember, you know, Rutherford, some of the guys, oh, you spoiled brat. The money you guys are making today, you know, compared to what we made back in the day. But it's all relative.
Sure, sure.
Back in the day, they were making good money, but when you compare it to what's being made today, it's not so good. And I can say the same thing. Back in my day, I made more money than I ever dreamed of. But it's not like I made today.
You know, I know we're talking about the 25th anniversary, your final 500. Every time, you know, every time you and I have spoken, I've never heard you mention an ounce of regret about wanting to do more or missing out on something. But is it okay for those of us who appreciated your career at Indianapolis to dream about what if you stayed on for two more years? Nothing against Little Al or Paul Tracy or Emo in 94 with the stock block, but I'm just saying, good Lord, brother, you in the Beast? Come on. Again, I know you're not a regrets guy, but do you ever think about that? Like, oh, that might have been fun.
Oh, yeah, I definitely thought about that. I've joked about that. I said that would came close to bringing me out of retirement. But it was a joke.
Yeah.
it really didn't, but boy, it would have been fun.
Wow.
But that would have been cool to be able to run that thing, you know, but hey, I was perfectly happy with my decision and the timing of it. It was the right time. And I have never, you always miss something that you love doing, you know, and because to me, there's nothing I could ever do. And I don't even try. You see, I've seen other people do, you get out of something and then they, all of a sudden they're going off in 19 different directions trying to find something to get that same whatever it was that they got away from gave them.
Yeah.
You know? And I realized immediately, I knew there was nothing I could ever do that would do for me what driving a race car did. And so I'm not even going to try to find something to replace that because there's nothing that could. And that's part of being comfortable with a decision. You know, and there has been no regrets. It's been the right time. For other people to wish it would have happened or carried on and been in that car or whatever, that's great. I love it. You know, I mean, it's a great feeling for me, you know. You know, that people would like to have seen that. You know, it's a compliment to me. And I appreciate that.
I think it just would have been ridiculous. You know, you having time to develop 8 trillion horsepower and that beautiful, beautiful chassis of Nigel's, you know, refining that sucker to perfection.
Now to figure out how to get that off the corner and get it to the ground, that would have been a kick.
Wow.
It would have been a lot of fun.
Well, on one other, I guess, the final question, and this is also...
One thing I was going to say real quick, about Mario and the swan song here. That was another reason I retired the way I did.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, one more, because I don't like... I'm not a big accolades guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't do it for that reason. And I'm not saying that Mario did, because he's not, you know, everybody's different. I mean, he just kept the fire lit, but I was always one of these guys. I was never superstitious, but why take a chance?
Yeah.
You know? And it's even like in testing, we'd laugh about it and joke at a test over the years. I'd say, all right, don't tell me when the last run is of the day. Just when it's over, tell me, okay, we're done. Get out of the car. Because that's when stuff happens, is on your last run. You know? And I would not have been able to handle all the... Oh, a complete year of everything I did being the last time.
Yeah.
That would have drove me crazy.
I know what you mean, and granted, I think for some of the older drivers, or even, you know, it could be baseball, it could be other sports as well, but if you do have someone who has stayed around and isn't quite what they once were, I don't have so much of an issue with the farewell tour. It gives fans a chance to...
I don't either.
But as it for those who are still competitive, I've never understood that farewell announcement or that kind of thing, because to me, you know, when I heard, and I'm not trying to pick on Dale Earnhardt Jr., but when I heard him announce that he was going to retire at the end of the year, totally understood it. I mean, he's the most popular race car driver in North America, and, you know, there's also a part of me that thought, if you're telling us this now, I wonder if we're going to be getting 100% out of you up until that final race. Because if you've made that decision, I bet it's going to be a lot harder to go in and attack. Or maybe it wouldn't, but there's a part of me that questions, if you know you're going to, if you know you want to stop, and you're telling us a 25% of the way into the season, I don't know if we're going to see the best of you for the rest of the year, but maybe it's the other way. Maybe he figures, heck, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to go nuts and drive harder than ever. But it still seems a little weird to me, though.
Yeah, but it can go either way. And it can be, you know, now I've got that off my shoulders, because that's a heavy thought to carry around.
Mm.
And just like I've heard him say, you know, just feel like a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders. And because I felt the same way. Once I talked to RP and said, Roger, this is what I think I'm going to do. And first thing he said was, well, that's just like he's always said anything. But when I did the Formula One test or Brabham, that guy, he would never stop me from doing anything. He just always said, hey, that's a decision you got to make. I'm not going to keep you from it. That's just a decision you got to make. And that was the first words out of his mouth again. You know, well, that's a decision you got to make. But then in the next sentence is, but if you decide you want to do that, he says, you know, maybe you just want to run the 500s. You know, because that's what he was saying. Then you just, you know, maybe just start doing the, trying to continue on, maybe try to get the fifth win, whatever. He didn't say that, but you know, that would be part of the thought process. And he said something about running just the 500. I said no. I said, Roger, if I do it, I'm doing all of it. I don't agree that you can be sharp running one race a year or three races a year. You can't be up at the level you need to be to do it right.
Yeah.
Which the desire is going, which is why I'm thinking about doing what I'm doing. So I know I wouldn't be at my best. And so if I'm not going to run. If I do this, I'm doing everything. That's why I'm doing it. So then his next words were, well, if that's the case, then, you know, obviously we'd like you to stay involved with the team. Now, that was a big relief because I wasn't ready to leave the sport. And that was the hard part of the decision. You know, I wouldn't know what I'd do with myself.
Yeah, Rick's speedy oil change in Bakersfield probably wasn't the life you were wanting, brother.
Yeah, exactly. And so when he said that, it's like, oh man, you know. So once it was out, it was a huge weight off your shoulders, and I've heard Dale say that. And so it could be now, okay, the decision's made. I can relax. I can have fun, and he may even run faster just from being relaxed and not keyed up about all this weight on you. You know, he may perform even better. You know, it just depends. It depends on the true, whatever the true motives are for the decision that the person made.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's different for everybody.
If I was getting, you know, the older you get, the more the risk starts outweighing the reward instead of the reward outweighing the risk. Which was part of my decision too, because I knew it was desire, you know, and everything else. That's part of the swing. And if it's bothering me enough, it's scaring me more. I mean, it always scares me. If it doesn't, you're crazy. You know, but it's a healthy fear you have to have. But if that fear starts getting beyond the healthy fear, you know. Then I may not run any better.
Yeah.
Or I may not run as well. Because now I'm just protecting myself and, you know, running out the laps.
And that was Rick Mears. Just such a gem. Always, always love speaking with him. And the other cool thing about Rick, always willing to pick up the phone, spend some time in person, you name it, about any topic, and he will absolutely open the door on just about everything. So I am quite confident that we will have Rick on for a third, fourth, fifth, you name it. Love him, and thankful to him for the time that he spends. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Thank you for listening.